Support for this show comes from Alpine Bank. 50 years young, 20 years green. Proud to support Parched from Colorado Public Radio. Learn more about Alpine Bank's history of community service and its green team at alpinebank.com.
Salty air is filling up my nose. I'm about 1,000 miles from the beginning of the Colorado River. I'm watching wave after wave hit the sand in Southern California. And there are surfers that are bobbing out in the big waves that you can hear and see roll in. There are seagulls and people walking along the sand. And as I turn around, there's this big industrial energy plant looking over the ocean. I'm in Huntington Beach, just south of Los Angeles. Some of this big industrial complex is older, and parts aren't used to make energy anymore. This site could help this community secure a brand new source of water. And this water wouldn't dry up during drought. It wouldn't depend on how much snow there is in the mountains. And there's an endless supply here in California, where climate change is threatening water security, like it is across the Southwest. So the idea? Knock some of this older infrastructure down and build a shiny, high-tech desalination plant. It would suck in ocean water, take out all the grime, muck, and salt, and make it clean enough to drink. Because right now, parts of Southern California depend on the water that comes from high up in the Rocky Mountains. It travels all the way here, down the Colorado River and through canals and pipelines. Around a quarter of Southern California's drinking water comes from a river that starts in my home state, Colorado. It's so weird to me that Denver and LA use some of the same water. And so as the river and the reservoirs dry up, can the ocean provide a secure source of clean drinking water for these communities? What if these coastal cities and other places like Mexico or Arizona use more of the ocean and less of the Colorado River, leaving more water for the rest of the Southwest? From CPR News, this is Parched, a podcast about people who rely on the river that shaped the West and have ideas to save it. I'm Michael Elizabeth Sackis. On this episode, we're in Southern California to figure out if seawater might be our savior. Some California cities already desalinate ocean water, and I'll take you to the biggest facility out here to see how it works and how much of a difference it makes. But first, I want to talk to someone who is really invested in whether Huntington Beach joins that list. I drive 30 minutes from the spot for a potential new desalination plant. I meet Oscar Rodriguez on a bench in a quiet neighborhood park. An ice cream truck makes its rounds.
So I work for a nonprofit. It's actually down the street. I've been helping people find affordable housing or building affordable housing for maybe 5 years now.
Oscar is one of the people who could use desalinated water if it expanded along the Southern California coast. He was born in Los Angeles and moved to Huntington Beach when he was young, so his family grew up drinking Colorado River water.
My mom would always try to conserve water any way we can. You know, like even if we had a issue with plumbing, she would always, you know, put like a bucket by the shower so that none of the water could go to waste and we could use that to water plants.
He's gotten more involved in his community as an adult. He sees the ways water matters to the economy and got very interested in understanding the pluses and minuses of a desalination plant in his city. That's partly because his neighborhood has had to fight environmental injustices here before. Oscar lives in Oakview within Huntington Beach, and his old elementary school is right next to a city trash facility. He remembers the constant smell and all the seagulls that pecked at the garbage.
We had this game, we would all run into the field, and then that would cause the seagulls to fly over the school, which would mean, you know, people getting, you know, bird droppings. And so that was kind of like a joke that we had. But it took me going to college to actually learn that that was not okay.
What wasn't okay was Oscar and the kids in his community growing up in those sorts of conditions. As he got older, Oscar started to fight the ways the site was operated. And eventually, his community won. The company running the dump spent millions to upgrade the facility. Oscar brings that experience and a deep desire to do what's right for his neighborhood to the question of where their water should come from. Because removing salt from seawater has the potential to affect people and wildlife nearby.
I'm not opposed to desalination myself, but I think desalination should be part of the portfolio, right?
Humans thirsty for fresh water have always had their eyes on the ocean. The problem, obviously, seawater is salty. Too salty to drink, too salty for most crops. So salty, the water corrodes pipes and pumps and wood and metal and pretty much anything it touches. For thousands of years, people have worked to find ways to remove that salt and keep the fresh water. First, we tried distilling. People heated the seawater, then collected the vapor, which didn't have salt in it, then let the vapor condense into fresh water. People later invented special membranes that trap salty particles and let the water pass through. That's basically what modern-day desalination plants use, with the help of pumps and lots of power to push water through the membranes. No part of the globe has embraced desalination quite like the Middle East.
Oil money is also making it possible for the governments to make better use of their land resources. Abu Dhabi has water for irrigation now because of the millions it has spent to develop large desalination projects, converting seawater to fresh water. And because the sand here is fertile, water means that agriculture can become possible in the deserts of the Arabian Peninsula.
Saudi Arabia went big on desalination early. They built their first plant in the 1930s. That investment has grown. It now gets 60% of its water from the ocean. And today, the country alone is responsible for creating about 1 out of every 5 gallons of desalinated water anywhere on the planet. A few decades after Saudi Arabia, the United States started to fund its own projects in the 1950s. At that time, parts of the South and Southwest were, this might sound familiar, gripped by a major drought.
I'm sure that before this decade is out, that we will see more and more evidence of man's ability at an economic rate to secure fresh water from salt water. And when that day comes, then we will literally see deserts bloom.
The water technology showed such promise that President Kennedy hyped desalination and the economic potential of creating fresh water in this 1961 newsreel segment. Vice President Lyndon Johnson cutting the ribbon on the country's first desalination plant was worthy of a White House film crew.
It is a matter of great interest to me. It's a matter of the greatest interest to the Vice President, who, living as he does in the state of Texas, has seen throughout his life how important it is that fresh water be secured. And it is for that reason that he is there today in Freeport participating in this dedication. So that I now open this greater effort in Freeport, Texas, and wish success to all who are involved.
With the technology tested, states were ready for a technological freshwater revolution. Congress supplied funds to build 5 plants to show off how desalination could help different places. But then the rain came back. Plans were scrapped for a big plant near Los Angeles, and Congress didn't have a reason to fund such expensive projects. But since then, hundreds of plants have been built in the U.S. Now, the biggest desalination plant in the Western Hemisphere is in San Diego County. It's about an hour down the coast from where Oscar lives. After the break, we'll take a tour of this place, which makes billions of gallons of fresh drinking water from the ocean. Hey, it's Michael. Thanks for listening to Parched. If you love stories about nature and the American West, I have another show for you to check out. Terra Firma is a podcast that combines the sounds of the outdoors with reflections by writer C. Marie Furman. Find Terra Firma wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Alpine Bank. 50 years young, 20 years green. Proud to support Parched from Colorado Public Radio. Learn more about Alpine Bank's history of community service and its green team at alpinebank.com.
I'm just a few blocks away from the Pacific Ocean, and in front of me is the country's largest desalination plant. It sucks in ocean water, and a couple hours later, makes it clean enough to drink. And I am about to take a tour of this place. My guide is Michelle Peters with Poseidon Water, which operates the plant. Michelle gets me set up in a fluorescent vest, safety goggles, and a hard hat.
I keep wearing those at all times unless they're becoming their own safety issue.
And feel free to take it off.
My headphones plus the hard hat is, you know, making it a little bit. But yeah, I think I got it. I cranked it real down. I'm going to have a headache by the end of this.
San Diego County saw the need for this plant, starting with droughts in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Water officials wanted to shore up their supplies by getting water from new sources. At one point, they were getting almost all of their water from non-local sources, like the Colorado River.
And in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, when significant drought hit and water taps ended up needing to be either shut off completely or water restrictions came in place, San Diego was hit really hard. Especially because we relied so much on outside imported water sources.
Then in 2000, the big drought hit, the one we're still in today. San Diego started working on this huge desalination plant. It came online in 2015. Since then, it's created more than 100 billion gallons of drinking water.
And we've got more to provide.
This plant, built to tap the ocean like a reservoir, is a whirring, humming tangle of pipes and pumps stacked from the floor to the ceiling. We head inside the reverse osmosis room, the room where all the membranes take the salt out. And it's loud in here.
We've got, like, at least two stories worth of these horizontal white pipes. And so essentially, this is the room where the salt was being removed.
Yes, yes. So those membranes, the reverse osmosis membranes, they are fantastic at what they do. They're removing salt molecules, essentially creating this beautiful foundation of high quality water. It's quite remarkable, I will say.
Jessica Jones, who's also with Poseidon Water, meets us on the tour. She wants me to try the final product of all this pumping, filtering, and more filtering.
We get to taste the water.
Ooh.
I was going to ask what it tastes like.
Oh, it's great.
On the roof of the desalination plant, Jessica hands me a cup of clear, crisp water.
This water that we're going to drink right now, 2 hours ago, it was in the Pacific Ocean. So it takes 2 hours for the water to go from the ocean to right here, and then it takes about another hour to deliver the water inland to the aqueduct.
Okay, so this cup of water that you just poured for me 2 hours ago was salty ocean water from the Pacific Ocean. Okay, I'm gonna try it. This is crazy.
The plant now produces 10% of San Diego's drinking water and is their largest local source. It's helping to shift the county off of the Colorado River. Combined with other local water projects like recycling water and conservation, the county now uses less of the river.
So if we were producing our own local water supply here, it would alleviate some of the strain on those inland dry states, not just here in Southern California, but Arizona, Colorado, Utah. So we all need to do our part because it's just getting drier and hotter.
Jessica has been living in California for more than 20 years. That whole time, she's been working on this desalination plant.
Wow, so you've been part of this since the beginning?
Since it was just an idea, yeah.
What is it like seeing it, you know, if you saw it on paper and now it's here in existence?
I'm so proud. I joke that this is my first child. I mean, I really am so proud of what we've been able to do here. And I'm not out here as much right now. And so for me to come out here and visit, it's amazing.
As the drought gets worse and communities here in Southern California, like San Diego, rely on the Colorado River, and we're seeing those big headlines and we're seeing Lake Mead and Lake Powell plummet, you know, do we need more plants like this one? Like, how do you feel about that?
So we do. I mean, this local water supply is climate resilient, where it's not dependent on any rainfall or snowpack. And it is so important to be resilient and not reliant on other sources. I mean, we cannot survive without water. And it is a human right, and we need to be looking to the future and how we can provide it to not just Californians, but make sure that everyone in the West has a safe, reliable drinking water supply.
As Poseidon was getting the San Diego plant going, the company made plans to build more plants in California, including in Huntington Beach, where Oscar lives, where we listened to the ocean waves at the start of this episode. Poseidon laid out a plan for the old industrial site to be transformed to create billions of gallons of local, fresh drinking water. For the company, it's business. But it's also their vision for the Southwest survival in an age of less water. But the more Oscar learned about the idea, the less he liked it.
When you look at it, that's pretty much the start of privatization of our water, which puts it at the hands of Wall Street investors, which in return, Wall Street doesn't care about whether it benefits the community. Their bottom line is to make a profit.
Remember, Oscar thinks desalination can make sense, but he doesn't want a private company involved. He believes the public should own the plant and the water it produces. Oscar also sees a big, expensive plant to remove salt from the sea as a last resort.
And when I say last resort, meaning that we're already doing everything in the books that will allow us to continue having a healthy supply of water. And the reality is we're not doing anything close to that.
Those are only a couple of the reasons Oscar and others oppose big desalination plants. Oscar's learned they can be tricky to run in an environmentally friendly way. For every gallon of fresh water they make, desalination plants create more than a gallon of brine. That super salty concentrate has chemical residues, and it's toxic. Plants, like the one in San Diego, pump it back into the ocean. We don't know much about the impacts of that in specific places because there isn't enough research, but it's a big red flag for Oscar.
Huntington Beach is known for, like, you know, for its surfing, Surf City USA, and all that was going to affect that.
Poseidon says it lessens environmental harms by diluting the brine, mixing it with ocean water before putting it back into the sea. And they avoid a harmful tactic that some desal plants use, where heat helps remove the salt. That hotter discharge can hurt animals. But even with those safer steps, a study published in 2019 found that the San Diego plant made the water saltier than their permit allowed. And that plume of brine went much further into the ocean than it was supposed to. Poseidon disputes the findings. It says they don't line up with the results from monitoring the company is required to do by California and the EPA. The salty, toxic brine from desal plants is heavy, and it can settle on the ocean floor, where it can suffocate animals. And animals might struggle to live where the wastewater is released because of how quickly that water might move. The research didn't find a direct negative impact. But here's the thing. The study says if Poseidon had been dumping that brine into a pristine environment, there likely would have been an impact. But there was plenty of industrial waste already dumped in that area, so the ecosystem didn't show a major change. Desalination plants also use a ton of energy. The one I took a tour of uses the energy of a town with thousands of homes. That's a big carbon footprint, and that won't change unless renewables and battery storage can make desalination cleaner sometime in the future. These plants are also expensive to build, and all the energy they use means desalination is one of the most expensive ways to create fresh drinking water. That cost got passed on to customers in San Diego County when Poseidon's plant went online. The county's switch to desalination and other water sources has made water bills here some of the most expensive in the country. In Huntington Beach, where Oscar lives, Poseidon said the plant would raise home water bills by $3 to $6 a month. That may not sound like a lot, but it could really impact Oscar's neighborhood.
They would say, oh, prices are going to increase $6, right? It's like a cup of Starbucks. But then a lot of apartment units where people live, there's only one water meter. And so if the landlord's water rates increase, they're going to increase rents. And then it leads to displacement and so on. It's like a domino effect.
Some studies found the price increase would likely be higher than what Poseidon said. Of course, drought means our water might get more expensive anyway, especially if our local utility needs to find a new source. But Oscar doesn't think desalination's downsides could be managed in the proposed Huntington Beach project. And he isn't alone.
Okay, so we're going to move to general public comment. As you know, I indicated that it was going to be reduced to 1 minute. Come on, let's go.
This public hearing was held in 2022.
Hi, I'm Adriana Maestas, and I'm an Orange County resident. I urge the Coastal Commission to deny the permit for this harmful project that never should have proceeded this far in the process. We don't need the desalinated water when we're not yet maximizing conservation. Please deny the permit. Listen to your staff.
After more than 20 years of planning, millions of dollars spent on studies, surveys, and reports, scores of rowdy public hearings, California's Coastal Commission killed Poseidon's plan for the Huntington Beach desalination plant.
Commissioner Amenzada?
No.
Amenzada, no. Commissioner Bochco?
No.
Bochco, no. Chair Brownzee?
No.
Brownzee, no. The vote is unanimous.
I actually knew from a text message that I got that it was a unanimous, and I was like, okay, that is probably a joke. To me, it was like amazing just to see that change can actually happen, even if you have a small margin of hope, you know? I was shocked that it went the way it did.
Yeah, Oscar and his group Oakview Comunidad helped kill the project.
Our intention at Oakview was never to be like this environmental group, but it's just so happened that a lot of issues regarding our environment are centered around sort of gatekeeping low-income communities from being part of the process.
Despite the rejection of the project, some California water planners and elected leaders still think their future depends on desalination. Last August, California Governor Gavin Newsom toured a plant that's under construction close to San Francisco. There, he laid out a proposal for why California should invest billions of dollars to boost the state's water supplies. He sees desalination as an important part of that plan.
We're here to highlight, with renewed sense of urgency, truly the moment we're in. In the last few years, science and the data leads us to now understand that we will lose 10% of our water supply by 2040. The more we see projects developed like this, the less water that we will be utilizing from traditional conveyance. Less water, for example, in Southern California, coming third of which they receive from the Colorado River, less water that we'll need to pull from the Colorado River. That's why these programs are complementary. This is not the solution to the water crisis, desalinization, but it is a significant part of our effort and our portfolio.
So California is still signing off on new desalination projects, but they don't look like the big plant in San Diego County or the rejected one planned for Huntington Beach. They're smaller, which can allow them to do things a little differently. Just a few months after the California Coastal Commission rejected the Huntington Beach desalination project, it approved plans to build one 30 miles away along the same stretch of California coast. I went to see where and how this plant will be built to better understand what the future of desalination might look like.
And so right now we are on the Pacific Coast Highway, right? Very famous highway that people are familiar with.
Yes, this is PCH right here in the heart of Dana Point. So we are going to be turning left. We'll essentially head towards the Dana Point Harbor.
Mark Cerna and Rick Shintaku from the South Coast Water District take me down to the beach to see where this future desalination plant will pull water from the ocean. It's winter and people are out here camping on the state beach. Rick explains how they'll drill pipes under the sand and under all of these campsites to make sure this coastal community has a little more protection in case climate change and drought don't let up.
What does the Colorado River mean to folks here that live here, that recreate here, that camp here? What does it mean for people?
So the Colorado River in this overall area has been the lifeblood of our water supply. I mean, we've been 100% dependent on our drinking water supply from the Colorado River and the State Water Project for many years. We do realize we have the responsibility to offset or to reduce our take from the Colorado River as all of us are seeing the decline in that overall supply, and it's very worrisome, and we feel that as well down here.
This Dana Point desalination plant has opponents, but nothing like the large, organized, and vocal coalition that killed the plant in Huntington Beach. State regulators and many environmental and community groups agree. The Dana Point project has most of what's on their desalination wish list. For example, they're building solar power for the new plant, which would supply about 15% of its energy. And the pipes will draw water from under the sandy seabed, which will fully prevent the problem of sucking in and killing marine life. The plant will also send its salty brine back into the ocean, where an already existing wastewater treatment plant does the same. A report from the California Coastal Commission says that will substantially reduce the brine's impact. These changes mean this proposed desalination project in Dana Point would be the first in California to meet the state's ocean protection standards. The proposed plant in Oscar's neighborhood didn't do the same. And the Dana Point plant would also be one-tenth the size of the rejected Huntington Beach one. At $140 million, it's also one-tenth the price tag. That means customers' bills won't be hit as hard. And the South Coast Water District says it will try to ease the burden on lower-income residents. But Rick says there'll still be some extra costs because we're running out of water.
The bottom line is all of the low-hanging fruit has been picked. There's no free or cheap water anymore.
So, what did we learn? Desalination is already playing a role in a West with less water. And it could play an even bigger role. it can reduce big coastal towns' dependence on the Colorado River. Even Arizona is looking into the idea of building plants near the ocean to pump water inland. So we'll probably see more desalination in the future. Still, there's work to be done to make the plants more energy efficient and safe for marine life. And the higher price for treating ocean water means customers pay more. But the cost of water from the Colorado River is also going up. So the era of cheap water in the West could be coming to an end. The solutions we've explored so far to bring more water to the Southwest are expensive and take lots of time to build. Desalination and moving water from other rivers, like the Mississippi, are big ideas. Focusing on those means we don't have to ask ourselves hard questions about how to conserve water. So, for the next few episodes, we're turning towards cities. How can cities and the people who live in them use less water? On the next episode of Parched, we'll visit a place known for its neon signs, poker tables, and huge fountains.
I mean, there's a lot of bets and gambles going on here, but the house this time is saying, okay, we have to win this one. We have to win the gamble with water. And you know what? The house is doing what the house has always done. They're trying to win, and they're going to win this, I believe.
What can we all learn about water conservation from a city famous for excess? That's next time on Parched. Hey, it's Michael. Thanks for listening to Parched. I have another show I know you'll love. Ghost Train is about an ambitious plan for commuter rail in Colorado, how it got sidetracked, and where Denver and other cities might go from here. It's a question facing cities across the country. Find Ghost Train wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Alpine Bank. 50 years young, 20 years green. Proud to support Parched from Colorado Public Radio. Learn more about Alpine Bank's history of community service and its green team at alpinebank.com.